What's up, everybody? It's your boy Wings of Redemption, and we're back with Painkiller Already, episode 41. And now we have our first special guest of the night. It's your boy Joe Lozon.
What's going on, buddy?
How's it going?
Good, man. Right that time?
You got it right. Much better.
Yeah, I was horrible. I'm the one. Anyway, so Joe, I know you do interviews all the time. You probably get this every day. Hypothetical situation. You're married.
Yep.
You swap bodies with your wife. Did you do it just to check it out?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, probably, yeah.
All right.
my girlfriend's freaking short as hell. She's like, weighs like 90 pounds. She's like 5 feet tall. I'd see the world from a different height.
That's for sure. You'd see a lot of things from a different height.
Yeah, there'd be a whole new thing going on there.
Oh, that would not be going on.
When I said, would you do it just to see what it's like? That was not would you swap question.
That was a would you have sex question.
Oh, no. No?
You're in the female body, though.
And it doesn't matter.
And it's not gay anymore because you're
but
a girl.
It's your body.
Is Joe Lozon like the anal sex? Is that right reason?
No.
Wings, man. This is an honored guest. This is not a YouTube slur. But yeah, that was Ricky Chops' answer. Like, with no hesitation, the guy goes, nah, she takes it up the butt. I can't do that.
Yeah. No way.
Bodies.
The sex is not something that would be happening.
But it's your body that you would be having.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, Joe, don't go kidding us. We know you've had sex with yourself before, right? Cool. This is just taking it to the next level.
Yeah.
Right?
Just for the record, we're not CNN here. We do not do professional interviews for a living.
That means I don't have to watch language or any of that bullshit.
No. Hey, you guys want me to dig into the questions, or you want to go first? So here's what somebody asked this. They wanted to know if any other fighters are gamers. And I almost had – so Nate Quarry, right? He's a gamer too, isn't he?
I don't know about Nate. I know a lot of different guys play Call of Duty though.
Really?
I don't know if they're super into it, but I know that a lot of guys – I mean it's a good thing for downtime. I mean like if we're in the gym all the time, you're constantly getting punched in the face, lifting, running, all that kind of stuff. You need something to just kind of hang out. Movies get boring, so you go to Xbox. You go to things like that. A lot of guys play games.
Man, I'm pretty sure – I think Nate actually became a Left 4 Dead character.
Really? That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. I'm not completely positive it was Nate Quarry, but I think it was. And I know one of the UFC fighters is one of the zombies in Left 4 Dead. Like they did – they brought him in and I saw the whole thing where they did the motion capture. It was pretty cool.
That is awesome. You know, I was I wasn't a zombie game, but they made the UFC game and I got scanned for that and all that kind of stuff, which was pretty badass.
What's that experience like?
It was pretty quick. They took photos to get like birth marks and tattoos and all that kind of. Neither of which.
So what were you wearing?
Just regular fight shorts, and then they just basically took it. Yeah, they had you stand in one spot and look, like you know, turn so many degrees and took a whole bunch of pictures, and they did like a body scan that got like a 3D rendering of you. That was pretty cool. The thing didn't take long, but it was pretty cool.
Did you put on one of those like skin suits with the white balls on it?
They do all that for all the motion capturing. For what we did, it's just you know stand there just so they can build the 3D model of us. That's what it.
Cool, man. Huh. So the UFC fighters, they don't actually get paid for the UFC game. Like I think I heard Dana White talking about that.
Yeah, no, we don't. I mean, honestly, it wouldn't be that much anyways. There's so many guys in there, you know. Like I don't know how many games it sold, but there were, you know, it would be such a small percentage anyways. We most of the fighters sign like almost like a merchandise agreement, and but the video game is excluded and all that stuff. But they can make you know jewels on T-shirts and action figures and whatever else they want.
But the other cool thing is though it gets you kind of well known, like you know, like any exposure you get is the next Mountain Dew deal that you might land or whatever.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, and who doesn't want to be in a video game? You know, like that was like the coolest thing. You know, up until that point, it was like I got the game in advance before it was even out. You know, I got to play it. You know, I'm in a video game, two video games. So it's pretty badass.
I want to be in a video game too.
You're on your way, Rush. You're on your way.
Yeah, Russia, you I could see it happening. So here's another question I got. So picture this coming from a gamer. How do you deal with the school bully?
You gotta do jiu-jitsu. You gotta learn wrestling. You know, it's like most guys that are bullies have no idea at all what they're doing. You know what I mean? Like, I have kids at my gym that, like, couldn't fight their way out of a paper bag, but they know a little bit of wrestling, and they'll get zero crap from anyone because they'll just dump the kid on his head. It's
win the takedown.
Yeah, definitely. And it's way better than punching. You know, if you get a kid that's trying to bully you and you shove him or push him, they don't know that you double-legged them into a locker versus, you know, but you throw one punch, you're getting in trouble. So I think wrestling's the way to go.
I like that. Yeah, but it takes an actual, like, time investment, right? There is no afternoon you can spend that's going to help you beat a guy who has 40 pounds on you. You have to actually join the wrestling team, you know, join a fight club or whatever and like, do it for real. And it's going to be 3 or 4 months before you've got any, you know, talent you can employ on a bigger guy.
Or you can take the shortcut and use the math book.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. I was like, if you want a shortcut to beat up the guy that got 40 pounds on you, get yourself a rubber hammer.
Yeah, right? and he gets a rubber hammer, and it's just escalation. You know what I mean?
Rubber hammer fights. Then everybody's doing them after school.
So, Joe, I wanted to talk about when I watch the UFC, it seems like if you were to rewind, 7 years or so, there were more jiu-jitsu fights than now. Now it seems like guys are standing more often than they used to.
Yep.
Do you think that's because it's an effective fighting style or because stand-up fighters get forgiven for losses? Or, like, what are you thinking there?
I think that, like, a long time ago, like, submissions are super easy to set up on someone that doesn't know what's coming. You know, mm-hmm. But nowadays everyone's so, you know, well-versed in the submission game, it's much tougher to hit an arm lock. You know, it's not like, you know, the Hoist Gracie days when no one knew what an arm lock or a triangle choke was. It was, you know, this mysterious choke that no one understands. Now it's like everyone's putting in a ton of time. And it honestly, nowadays it comes down to who's the better conditioned guy, who's a little bit faster, who hits a little bit harder, and the fight starts on the feet. So, you know, people, you know, you try to make a good first impression with that first punch you throw, and you hope for the best.
I got a question.
Go ahead.
All right, and you're in a fighting situation. At what point do you throw the first punch? I mean, like how do you decipher if you should go first or he, or do you always wait?
In a professional fight or
anywhere?
Anywhere. You know, I don't like the idea of throwing the first punch. I think that, you know, outside, you know, a lot of things can be avoided. You know, people seem to think that, oh, I had to do this or I had to do that, or I'm not going to let him punk me. Those are the stupidest things people can say. I mean, it's like even if I can definitely fight, but I wouldn't get in a fight in a bar, you know, because I could beat the crap out of the guy and then his girlfriend bottles me or stabs me with a, you know, so much, or his buddy that kicks you in the head or that stomps you from behind, or like there's so much bad stuff that can happen. So like outside, I pretty much would never throw the first punch. You know, I think that there's better ways to handle things. During a fight, you know, I think you should always try and be the aggressive one. You should try and get off first. You know, you don't want to, but you definitely want to throw the first punch.
Huh. So you want the first punch, but you don't fight outside the ring. Do you think guys that know how to fight, you know, the guys with some sort of training are less likely to get into fights?
Oh, definitely. You know, someone was sending me a message on Twitter the other day saying how, like, their buddy saw Uriah Faber and they thought that he was walking through the club tough. So he started mean mugging him and thought they were going to throw down. It's like Uriah would definitely not start a fight with you because you were looking at him across the club. You know what I mean? But the guy that's untrained that would probably get the crap kicked out of him was the guy that was going to start the fight. It's like guys that train and fight for a living or even just train for fun, they get out all that aggression. You know, I get so many guys at my gym that, you know, they used to be, you know, punks. They were punk kids. And then they started doing jiu-jitsu and they get all that aggression. They get out all that energy and they don't have to fight outside. And they get to, you know, let it all out in a productive environment where there's mats and it's safe and it's one-on-one and you know what you're getting into. Not, like I said, out in a bar where, you know, or you hit someone, even worse, you hit someone, you knock them out, they go down and hit the head on a table or something, and you're in jail for manslaughter. It's just so many stupid things that can happen fighting outside.
So you're a purple belt, is that right?
Yeah. I mean,
so
I've been...
Obviously, you've got the skill level higher than probably a lot of black belts. What made you stop, or like, what was you thinking there?
I never trained in the gi at all until I went out to Hawaii with BJ. And I trained a little bit, and I really didn't even have a belt out there. You know, he would have given me a belt, but I just didn't do the gi enough to get a belt. And then when I came home, I decided I wanted to put a little more time in the gi. And I got my...
Let me interrupt you. For people that don't know, a gi is like a thicker version of the karate pajamas that those guys wear.
Yeah, there's a million different chokes and things you can do with the uniform, you know, against people. And so I trained in Hawaii a little bit. When I came back, I started... put a little more time in a gi. I got my blue belt, and then I blew up my ACL that night. I re-injured my ACL that night. And so then I was sidelined for a while, and then I put a little more time into the gi, and I got my purple, and I haven't done it since. It's really, really tough to put in time on gi, and then boxing and lifting and getting ready for fights all at the same time. It's real, real tough to do both.
I didn't know about your ACL. Did you have it fixed? Did you have surgery on it?
Yep, I did it in one of my fights, and then I was limping like real, real bad. It was a Jeremy Stevens fight. I tried to shoot in the beginning of the fight, and I just fell over, and I ended up winning the fight. And but I had a huge cut on my head, so I didn't train for a week. And then the first night I went back, I got my belt at the beginning of class, and then we started to try and train and warm up, and my knee locked up. And yeah, so I did I had ACL replacement. I did the cadaver.
Cadaver. Yeah. I did the patella.
You did patella. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to do patella because I heard it's super painful, like kneeling down and stuff. It's like kneeling down on like a tack or a marble or something.
It hurt.
Yeah,
it hurt a lot. Did they have you doing rehab the same day as the surgery?
No, I had surgery on like a Friday, and then I went and started my rehab like Tuesday or Wednesday,
and I had surgery whatever day it was. I'll call it 6 a.m.
Yeah,
and by 3 p.m. they had my leg in this machine that was like stretching my brand new ACL. And
yeah, I didn't do the machine either. I didn't do the machine either. I remember like the toughest thing was when I woke up the next day after surgery and laying in bed and like the blanket being so heavy that like I couldn't turn my leg over, I couldn't do the rotation on my leg, like trying to lift my heel off the bed was like the toughest thing I've ever done in my life. I eventually got it, but it was so tough. I was amazed at, like, I went from fighting main event in the UFC to a month later I'm laying in bed unable to move my leg. It was pretty tough. A rough patch.
It sucks, man. Yeah, my rehab lasted a lot. It was like 6 months before I was, really, I don't know, even longer than that, like 18 months, and it was still bugging me, not quite right.
Yep, I fought 10 months after surgery. So I had ACL surgery, and then I fought later.
That's pretty fast. Yeah, that's pretty fast. How long have you been involved with MMA, like, from the very beginning?
I think I started in like 2001, so like it'd be like, I think it'd be 10 years like this coming summer.
Was it just like a hobby to begin with, or just something to do? Like, some people do yoga, but you did.
And 10 years. How old are you, by the way?
26.
26. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. How'd you get?
When I was in high school, I started when I was like a sophomore in high school, and WWF professional wrestling was huge. So we'd all watch the pay per view. We'd watch whatever Monday Night Raw, and we'd end up like trying to like power bomb each other, choke slam each other, and all that kind of stuff. And I had a trampoline, so we would end up on the trampoline trying to kill each other. And after, like, we've been doing that for, like, we were doing it for a while, like, maybe, like, a year and a half. And then my school did horrible. Like, in Massachusetts, we have an MCAS testing, which is, like, it's, like, standardized testing, but it's, like, essay format, which sucks. And my school did terrible on it. But then the teachers taught to the test. The next year, we did awesome on it. So as, like, a reward, we got a bunch of demonstrations and assemblies and things like that. And my trainer, Joe Pomfret, came here and did like a karate and jiu-jitsu demonstration for us. And the karate stuff was like, whatever. But the jiu-jitsu stuff was awesome. It was like what we were trying to do on the trampoline, he was doing. So it was like there's a legitimate system that we can, actually do this stuff. So a couple of my buddies went and signed up. And then next thing I knew, I was getting choked out all the time. So then I'm super competitive. I can't let them have any kind of advantage on me. So I had to sign up, and it just, just started as a hobby, and then I kept doing it throughout all college, and then eventually, I was doing amateur fights, I was doing pro fights, I was fighting in, like, Montreal, I was fighting in Florida, I was fighting all over the place, and then I got the call to fight in the UFC.
You got the pretty awesome call to fight in The Ultimate Fighter, right? That was, like,
I fought Jens Pulver first. Like, they were looking for him to knock me out. And then he was going to be the coach on the show. So they said, this will be perfect. We'll get this kid that's got a pretty good record. Jens will knock him out. And then that'll hype him going into the Ultimate Fighter show with BJ Penn. And I knocked out Jens. And then they told me right off the bat, we want you for the show. It'll be good TV, things like that. So I went on the Ultimate Fighter afterwards. A little
nice.
Back.
Yeah, actually, I remember now that you remind me. That's cool, man. That's
You mentioned like the professional wrestling. Did you see where Chris Jericho tweeted that thing the other night?
I heard about it. Yeah.
What do you think about? For those who don't know, Chris Jericho tweeted that that basically the UFC guys couldn't do what him and the rest of the pro wrestlers did. Basically, they couldn't hang in his world.
I wouldn't want to go and do what all the stuff they do, like all that the abuse on their body all the time and all the traveling and stuff like that. Yep. But I don't think those guys would last on the jiu-jitsu mat with me either. So
yeah, I don't think they want to get punched in the face for real.
Yeah, I'd rather be known for being good than being tough. You know,
yeah, exactly.
Those are super tough in that regard because they're taking constant pounding on their body and injuries and everything else. Like, I wouldn't want to be involved in all that crap.
You know, saying this, what I wouldn't want to do, I wouldn't want to work for Vince McMahon when I've heard about it.
Yeah, right, get fired.
You can't really tell how much of that's an act, though. That's just all theater.
Yeah, sure.
I watched Bret Hart's documentary, and that motherfucker hated Vince McMahon. By the time he ended up his career,
a lot of people don't like their bosses. But speaking of bosses, what's Dana like?
Dana is awesome. There are going to be some people that don't like him, and you know everyone's going to have you know people that you know hate and things like that. But every experience I've ever had with Dana has been awesome. You know, I don't know if it's because you know I'm from Boston. I don't know if he's from Boston too. I don't know if it's that. But like every single interaction I've ever had with Dana has been amazing. You know, he's always gone out of his way. He's always been real cool to me.
So, Joe, tough question. Your last couple fights, you've been getting, like, I might get this wrong, knockout of the night, fight of the night, sub of the night. Like, you've been getting those bonuses like wild.
Yep.
Do you think it helps to be on Dana's good side for that sort of thing?
It helps. I mean, it certainly doesn't hurt. You know, but, I mean, I've gotten 6 or 7 of them out of, like, 9 fights, I think. I think I'm tied for the record in them. You know, but I think honestly, it's more so because of how I fight. Like I go out there trying to rip your arm off or cave your head in every single time, you know, and I go push as hard as I can for as long as I can. And that's why I get tired sometimes, I gas out, but, you know, I'm going out there to finish you and to hurt you as fast as I can. And that's what they want. You know, they don't want to see wrestlers that go out there and just, you know, eke out a decision, you know. I think that's the big thing. You know, it's like I go out there, like I set my hair on fire, and the only way to put it out is by beating the guy.
Evan Tanner had this quote. He said that when you're an amateur, the most important thing is just to win, right? Get a win, it doesn't matter. You know, like you talked about, that guy that uses exhaustion as a weapon.
Yep.
As an amateur, that's cool. But as a pro, the show is almost as important as the record. What do you think of that?
Oh, definitely. You know what I mean? Like you could take a guy like John Fitch. He's got a great record in the UFC. You know, he's arguably one of the best welterweights in the division, no question. You know, it took him a long time to get to St. Pierre. You know, it's like he should have gotten there quicker. But, you know, when you have guys go out and they decision a lot of people, that's not going to do it. You know what I mean? You got to go out there and you got to be exciting, you know. And they'll tell you that, you know, we want you to win fights, but we want to, you know, we want to put on good fights. We don't want to see you go out there, you know. And Anderson Silva's done that. He's gone out there and just completely outclassed people. It made them look stupid, and it's been horrible, horrible fights because he's not doing a lot. You know, he's not enough to win. He's doing just enough to win and not enough to entertain.
Yeah, it seems like when you're that much better than your opponent, then you can just you don't even really even have to hit him. You can just dance around him and make him look stupid for.
Yep, he fought 20 minutes. Fought Tali's Lates, and the fight was like that. He fought Damian Maia, and he did that. And basically, he wanted to prove that he was better, which he did. And the fights went so long; it was like. You're watching him just kind of dance around the guy that's clearly better, and he's doing just enough to just like almost like agony and torture of letting the match go on instead of trying to put you away.
Speaking of Anderson Silva, man, so this guy fought at 205, and yep. he didn't seem to be given. For people that don't know, Anderson Silva is there's kind of two fighters on the planet who trade this best pound for pound guy, and he's one of them. You know, GSP being the other, and. Oh, my train of thought. Oh, so he fought at 205 when he normally fights at 185?
Yep.
And he didn't seem to be giving up any strength at all. Now they want to do a catch weight between him and GSP. GSP fights at 170. What's going to go – like how is this guy who's easily strong enough to roll with most 205ers, what's he going to do against GSP? How is this going to be a reasonable fight?
What are you thinking? I don't know. I mean, I think it's going to be tough for Anderson to get down. You know, I don't know how tough of a cut he has to 85, but I know that, like, in between fights, like, he'll blow up to, like, 220, you know, 220, you know, or so, which, you know, so.
What's the catch weight? Do you know?
I don't know. I don't know if they – I don't think they've even talked about it yet. You know, if they were going to find a catch weight, they'd probably find, like, 180 or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think that – I don't know how low he's going to get. It's going to be tough.
180? I think that's hardly a cut. Well, I mean, 185 is his normal weight. 180
5 pounds. 5 pounds is like cutting off your fingers or something. When you if you're like really cutting hard, if he's cutting hard to make 85 as is, he's not going to be able to cut a whole lot more.
Do they weigh GSP before or after he covers himself with Vaseline?
Re-skate?
Because it really will make a big difference because he puts a lot of it on. At least 3 jars.
There's all kinds of things people can do for grease. It's so like people are putting up like animated GIFs of Anderson, you know, rubbing the oil off his off the Vaseline off his face and then rubbing it on his chest and things like that. I've heard stories about guys like taking baths and like baby lotion like the night before. There's like there's so
the
many
night
things.
Before like 5 minutes before that guy's glowing in the ring.
You mentioned Anderson with the Vaseline. Did you mean GSP or Anderson?
I think on Anderson on the last one I saw. I mean, I'm sure it's people trolling more than anything. But you see him touch his face and you see him touch his chest. It's like, you know, what is going on? You know, it's like it is probably nothing. But you know, people are always looking for something. You know.
So do you hang out on SureDog or is that just like
I hate SureDog? No, I shouldn't say I hate SureDog. I hate the SureDog forum. I like SureDog.com, which is like the news site. I like SureDog for that stuff. I hate the forum though. The site that I love is MixedMartialArts.com. They have an awesome forum. They probably have the most guys that post on the Dana. Like the UFC reads MixedMartialArts.com every day. You know, Dana's on MixedMartialArts.com all the time. Shane Carwin's posted on there all the time. I used to post on there a ton. I don't post as much anymore, but I'm always reading. Like there's a bunch of very legitimate people that post there a lot because they keep a better rein on like the other posters. You know, like they don't just have people just attacking fighters so much. Like they're good about, you know, making sure, you know, there's not a mob on fighters and things like that. Like they do a pretty good job.
Right, I got a question.
So yeah.
Go ahead.
Have you ever run into some armchair Mr. Miyagi's?
Yeah, I mean, it happens a little bit. Usually it's people just trying to be helpful. Like, oh, you know, well, I did this or I did that and I can help you out. Or, you know what I mean? It's usually not people being, you know, disrespectful, but there's always people trying to, you know, help out and show you things and all that kind of stuff.
All right, man. I got a question.
All
right. So you're standing in line at the movie theater, right?
Yep.
The line is all men, but just normal men, right? Like people at the movie theater. Some are 22, some are 48.
Yep.
How many normal people can you beat up at one time?
Normal people? I don't know. Like 5-year-olds, I could beat up a lot.
I like where you're headed with this.
You sound like you've been watching my videos.
Are we talking one after another? Or are we talking?
No, we're talking like the no, in the scene from Matrix 2 when like they just mob.
I don't know.
Well, you got two, right? I mean, you can handle. You're
shots,
striking alone.
If I pick my shots and I kind of ran around and I could pick off the weak ones, I could maybe get like maybe 3 or 4. It's so tough because, you know, punching's a terrible way to fight because you break your hand, you get messed up, all this other stuff. And jiu-jitsu is good for one-on-one. It's really not good for a mob. You just get stomped to death.
Right.
I don't know. Probably.
But it's not as if you can't strike. It's not as if you're not throwing punches every day in the gym.
No, I can. But, I mean, I'm wearing hand wraps and I'm wearing boxing gloves and things like that. You know, your hand is not made for smashing things. It's made for grabbing.
All right. How about
it? Your fingers bend.
How many old guys are in this line?
I'm talking about your normal movie theater line makeup, right? Like, you know, you're going to have some – I'm going to call them all of fighting age, right? Let's make it at least 17.
Can I kick down the guy in the wheelchair cutting the tickets? Does he count?
Oh, my God.
You know, I don't know that the wheelchair guy should be your first target. I think you should take out a guy who's going to bring some offensive trouble.
Yeah. You want to use the wheelchair guy as like a weapon. Like, if you could get him up to speed and just go ramming speed ahead, you could take out a couple guys, bash kneecaps in, shins, whatever.
You want to go after the biggest, toughest, affliction-wearing tattooed D-bag in the entire world. Make a statement, you know.
About to destroy some morale, maybe get a couple people hesitant.
I'm going the other way. You want to grab the smallest guy first, you may be able to use him as a weapon.
Yeah, like, but see, I think that you're going to get other guys that normally wouldn't get involved as quick. And then if they see you hitting a kid, they're going to be like, oh, that's wrong. And then they're going to come after you.
Yeah, but they're gonna be thinking to themselves, I don't want him to hit me with that kid.
Yeah. If you hold him by the feet, they've kid? Got – yeah, like what is that that medieval thing where you've got the chain with the ball on the end?
A mace or something?
Is that called a mace? Yeah, yeah.
A flail.
So as you think
that's
about
a flail
it,
with a chain.
A flail with a chain? All right. Well, hear me out here. The body of like a 6-year-old is kind of like a flail with the chain, right? I mean, you got the sort of heavy item on the end, his skull, and then like a flexible little body, his spinal cord.
Kind of. I got kids that train at my gym, and it they would absolutely overtake me. Like, we got, maybe 10 or 15 of my little kids that are probably, 6 to 8. They would absolutely get the best of me. Like,
really?
If they were fearless, they would. They would get me.
See, how many of them could you take, though? Many times.
How many 5-year-olds?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's got to be a bigger number than 3 or 4. Are you good for 8?
Yeah, no, 5-year-olds, I don't know. I think 30 or 40.
Yeah, exactly. All right. I'm about 6'1", 185 pounds. I'm in decent shape. I work out maybe one day a week. I'm pretty sure I can take 9 to 10 5-year-olds, okay? Because I figure I just
kick the first one-punch half of them, right?
Yeah, I'm gonna kick at least one right in the chest, and he's going to be down for the count. And he's falling into another one who's going to be slowed down considerably. And then I just start running. And that way the fast ones are nearest to me, but the slow fat kids are way in the back. So I can beat up on the fast ones and then work my way back to them.
Yeah, you know, and then I think that once the kids, they catch up to you, they're going to grab onto your legs.
That's what you don't want to happen.
Well, yeah, you're going to avoid it for as long as you can. But I think once they grab you, I think that's going to give you a strong foundation. Then you just pick at all the other ones that are trying to get in.
No, so you're going to use their leg grabbing as, your base.
Yes.
And then just start working the punches.
Yep.
No, see, I think we're missing it. You're missing out on a crucial part of this. Like, 10 5-year-olds weigh what? 500? How much is a 5-year-old weigh?
Oh, maybe
80 pounds.
80 pounds? No, 60 pounds?
That's 80 is a lot. Yeah.
60 pounds.
Maybe in America. All right. We're talking about 600-700 pounds of people on you all of a sudden. That's a lot of weight. That's like that reverend guy that hates wings so much. It's going to feel like the blob is on you.
Let me make a statement. I got no problem with Reverend Byrne.
I know. We're just joking, Reverend Burns. But then, no, they're going to go for your balls. They're going to be biting, clawing, scratching. I don't want those things anywhere near me. I want to keep my distance, deal with them one at a time.
If I'm fighting 5-year-olds, I'm wearing a cup and I'm getting gloves. I'm wrapping my hands and I'm knocking these little shits out.
What kind of gloves do you think? Would you go with the 5-ounce gloves, or do you want the 16-ounce boxing gloves?
No, I want my MMA gloves so I can grab.
Okay.
All right.
Maybe you can sling some 5-year-olds around. All right.
So you think you could take Aki Bono?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. People that know, that's a sumo wrestler, and he went up against Royce Gracie, and Gracie used his Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu against him and got the win. Some sort of weird thing. What did he get, like a finger lock or something?
I think a gogoplata or omoplata. Gogoplata.
Is that what it was?
I think so.
That sounds like a bad guy from a Mario's game.
It should be.
Hey, man, steroids. You know, UFC fighters getting busted for steroids. Do you think they're more widespread than the guys getting caught? You think?
I'd say there are definitely guys that are using that aren't getting caught here and there. You know, because they don't test every fighter every single time. They'll test, all the title fights. They'll test the main event, which a lot of times is, you know, the title fight. And then they'll do a couple fights that are random. You know, like I've heard of, you know, guys, you know, hearing that, you know, they were going to test every single fighter on the card. I've heard of guys like saying they got hurt or they pull out or things like that, you know. So I'm sure there are other guys that are using, but I don't think it's as crazy as some people think. You know,
you think you can tell by their body type? Like, some guys are just perfect specimens.
Yeah, you know, sometimes those guys, the guys that juice, sometimes it's just really good genetics. Like, I've seen some guys that, you know, that never freaking touch a weight. And they are jacked.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
There's guys that don't, like, weight train.
Well, I'm just saying, just in general, like, whether it's or guys or whatever, you know, pretty much everybody is going to, you know, do weights and stuff like that. But I've had guys that, you know, like, the strongest guy in my entire gym is my size, doesn't lift weights at all. He's a trash man. He's dumping big-ass barrels of trash all day long. And that guy grabs you and you can't move. And he's, like, my size. He's unbelievably strong, you know, and he looks ripped but never touches weights, you know what I mean? So you never know.
Reminds me of Greg McDonald, where I used to work at.
Yeah, I've seen that. You see that a lot, like guys who work in who do work that's like heavy manual work, like brick masons and people who are working in plants moving boxes and stuff, and those guys end up being, just because of the weird movements that they have to make, the awkward movements with that much weight. It's you can't get that with, I mean, I guess you could get it with weight training, but you wouldn't want to.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. So you never know.
I don't know. I remember Greg could hold me down with one hand.
Joe, you figure out what you're doing for Valentine's Day yet?
I have no idea. I should figure that out. I got to drive to New Jersey tomorrow morning. One of my guys is fighting on the Strike Force undercard, the Fedor fight.
Uh-huh.
So I'm going to be gone from tomorrow morning at like 6 until Sunday night. And then my girlfriend's going to be here. And then Monday's Valentine's Day. So I should probably figure out something pretty quick.
So you'll be there at the Fedor fight? You'll be ringside?
I won't be ringside. I'll be in the back room. My guy's like, he's one of the first fights. It's like the
undercard.
Card. And then, but yeah, I'll be there for the fight after, though. I'll be there watching.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Man, I don't know. Maybe I should be paying more respect, but I haven't seen Fedor fight elite talent in a while. And the elite talent he faced kind of got exposed when they hit the UFC, guys like Krokop.
Yeah, like, I don't think that, you know, Fedor would do that good in the cage. Like, I think part of the reason why he lost his last fight was because of the cage. You know, I think that he was in the triangle. He tried to, you know, kind of throw the legs to the side, and he kind of ran into the fence a little bit. You know, it's kind of intimidating, you know, being in a cage versus a ring. It's a very different experience. You know, and it is different. You know, it's so much different. If I have my guys fighting in a ring or a cage, we have to completely, you know, game plan differently based on where it is. You know, and yeah, I mean, I don't think he was exposed necessarily, but he definitely doesn't have the intimidation factor that he had before, which was a huge advantage.
I got a couple questions here.
All right,
you got a guy in a submission hold. Is there any part in the back of your mind where you don't want to hurt him? Like, you ever hold back?
Kind of yes and no. I mean, in a fight, I'm not thinking about it too much. Like, if I have like very good control over him and there's no way he's getting away, I'm not going to crank it to be a jerk. You know, like I know the range of motion. You know, where he is comfortable, where he's uncomfortable, and he's going to tap, and then where I'm destroying his arm. You know, I understand the differences, so I'm not going to just destroy someone's arm just because I have it. But I'll give him like half a second at the uncomfortable range, and then hips to the sky, and I'm sending.
Yeah,
him.
There's a difference between winning a fight and like messing somebody up for a year.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
All right, I got Joe. Another question.
Go ahead, Wings.
Has ego ever bothered you while you're preparing for a fight? Like, is like you have crossed your mind or whatever? Like, just, you know, pride and stuff?
A little bit. I mean, like, the main thing, you got to be careful you don't get hurt in training. You know, so, I mean, ego and pride and all that stuff can be, you know, tough. But, like, fighting in general is a very, very tough sport because even if the other guy's better, you have to be mentally prepared and ready to, A, get your ass kicked and keep on fighting. But more importantly, you have to go into the fight thinking that you are going to destroy this guy and there's nothing he can do and that you are just a better fighter and you're going to destroy him. You know, and you have to go in with that mindset, but if things get rocky and you start to lose, you got to be ready to push on too. It's way tougher than people think. The psychological aspect of it is huge.
Hmm. All right. So what's a day in the life of Joe like, right? How much are you training? What are you doing on a normal day?
Right now I lift 3 days in the morning. So like I'm up at 5:30 in the morning and I leave my house at 6. I drive like an hour to go and lift because it's a really good place. Mike Boyle Strength Conditioning, which is like, it's a very, very good place, but it's not very close, but I think it's worth the drive. So I drive there and I lift from like 7 to 8:30, drive home. I'm home by like 9:30, 10 o'clock, basically eat, hang out for like an hour or so. Go to the gym at 12, teach like a grappling class or something. Then I'll box later in the afternoon, and then I'll do all my MMA stuff. So I'm probably – I work out from, you know, anywhere from 6 to 8 hours most days.
Wow.
And then for all my other time, I'm on Xbox playing Call of Duty.
Which games you playing? Call of Duty mostly?
Mostly Call of Duty. You know, I was way behind on all the first-person shooters. Like, I got in – when I had ACL surgery, you know, I was laid up in bed and I couldn't do anything. So I was playing World at War, but I was way behind. Like, I was awful. And then from there, I went back to regular COD 4. And then I got Modern Warfare. And that was like the first one that I got like when it was new. And I was still playing catch up. You know, like all my friends have been playing since, you know, like Halo 3. And, you know, they get tons and tons of experience. You know, and I played on the computer a little bit, like Counter-Strike and things like that in college, but never seriously. It'd be like, you know, screw around here and there. You know, so I basically stick to first-person shooters. I like Gears of War. I like Transformers just because it's badass, because it's Transformers. then, mainly, you know, mainly Call of Duty, though. You know, a little bit of Transformers, a little bit of Left 4 Dead, a little bit of Gears of War, a little bit of Ghostbusters. That's about it.
Oh, Ghostbusters is awesome.
Ghostbusters is awesome. I can't play it for very long, but it's definitely awesome.
I just like it because it's got some of the actors' voices in it.
Yeah, it's awesome.
I thought they were supposed to do a Ghostbusters 3 here in a minute.
They were talking about it. I think that someone put the hold on it. It might have been Bill Murray, actually.
Bill Murray's bitch.
Well, Bill Murray needs to hurry up. He's getting old.
Yeah, he hardly looks like Bill Murray anymore. How did we get you on the podcast, man? Everyone wants to know how we landed Joe Lozon.
Someone put up a... I don't know if I read... I'd known about Painkiller already for a while. I'd seen YouTube things, but I really don't listen to that many podcasts. You know, and the time was kind of bad because, like, normally, like, one of those days that I'm up early is Friday. So if I'm up at 5:30, I'm usually... By the time I get... I just got back to the gym. I just barely made it on here. By the time I get back from the gym, shower, eat, it's 11 o'clock. I'm going to bed. And, you know, but I started listening one day, and I couldn't turn it off. You know what I mean? I think I listened, like... 2 weeks. I listened 1 week. I didn't say anything at all. And then we were posting on Reddit like right after. And then we're going back and forth. So then I was paying attention a little bit more. And I don't know. I do all kinds of radio shows and things like that. So it's definitely awesome doing a Call of Duty one.
Yeah. Game. So people that follow me know that I'm kind of like a Reddit-aholic. You know, I go there and I spend time on it every day. And just
not when you're at work. Never when you're.
So anyway, like Joe replied to me. It was like JoeLozon.com was the guy's like Reddit handle. I was like, no way, this is Joe. And then I asked him, if we were to get into a fight, do you think that I could last 15 seconds no striking? And do you remember what you said?
Like I said, I would give it to you out of respect.
Yeah. He's like, I'll allow you to last 15 seconds in a fight with me. I was like, oh, that's perfect. So yeah, and then like so we went back and forth on the Reddit a bit, and then last week on the podcast you were active in the stream, and
yep.
We asked you to join, and then yeah, Joe Lozon, man.
So when can we expect this fight?
Between Joe and I? Oh man, I can't even outrun him.
Yes, he's in the air. He's going to be.
He just said he won't break your arm.
Yeah, nice.
He's not. Dude, I would go. I'd roll with Joe. I'd see how long I could last. I'd film it and put it on my channel. I wonder.
Oh, awesome.
I might take the 15-second challenge.
he'd be like, go. Woody turns around, runs, starts climbing up the canyon.
Jumping off the walls.
It's going to take more 50 seconds to get over that page.
9, 10. Woody's like trying to go higher. Joe's got him by the ankles. Nah!
Yeah, I'm just thinking 15 seconds. Like, if I could stop him from grabbing my head, it seems like it would take a couple seconds to hit most of it. Like, is he going to hit a flying armbar on me or something?
I got a lot of good speed. I got flying armlocks, flying triangles.
Keep my elbows in and try not to let you grab my head. 15 seconds.
Woody, your strategy has to be the same as when you're attacked by a bear. You want to roll into a play dead. All he can do then is kick you a little.
There was a guy. This is probably like 6 years ago, 7 years ago now. So I hadn't been training that long, like only like 3 years probably. And we were at a local fight, and there was a guy that was flown in from Arizona, and you know he's supposed to be one of he's supposed to be the main event. And then something happened, like his opponent missed weight or something, you know. So we were just all kind of hanging out, you know. I was there early, and my friend was talking to this other guy. His name was Ray, and I was like, Ray, you know. And Ray was talking, you know, just kind of like talking out of his ass a little bit, and you know. And Rick's like, Ray, he could beat you in a minute. And Ray's like, oh, no way, like he could tap you out in a minute. And Ray's like, no way. So we jumped in the ring, you know. Before this, like the place is empty. There's no one there, and I told him, and then to add insult to injury, I'm like, whatever submission you want, you name it. So he named it. He said an arm lock, and then I flat arm locked him in like 20 seconds. And he just cried.
So was that guy a fighter at all?
Like a professional fighter, flown in from Arizona, yeah.
Huh.
Yep.
And he didn't keep his elbows in.
This brings the question, have you ever seen a fluke, like somebody just straight up mess up in a fight where they should have won?
Oh yeah, I mean it happens. You know, I've been tapped out by guys at my gym that are like beginners. You know what I mean, it's like I get this kid, one kid at my gym who I'm never gonna hear the end of this. This kid, Brendan, who he's a good wrestler. You know, wrestles at one of the town high schools around us, And he's like 6'2", probably like 160 pounds. And, you know, like, he was going for a choke on me. And, like, I thought I was safe, and I kind of didn't give the choke any respect. And I tried to get out of it, and it's kind of, like, got to the point where, like, he tightened it up and tightened it up. It got to the point where, like, I couldn't get out of it. And he tapped me. You know, and he's been training with us, you know, not long, maybe a year and a half, 2 years, something like that. But he caught me. You know, it definitely happens.
So now you're a pickup line.
Yeah. Did you ever, like, when I was training, if a guy came in, and sometimes wrestlers would do this, they'd be, like, super aggressive and put, like, you know, just kind of beyond the etiquette of what was going on. The yep. instructor would go run up against him, and usually, like, he'd just do takedown drills on him, slam the guy on his back repeatedly until he sort of settled down.
Yeah,
well, do you ever do that, like corporal punishment?
Always. Yeah, we have. Our big thing, like the big theme for my school is we do knee on chest. Mm-hmm. So, like, you know, if you're side control, you pop up to knee on chest and you grab, you know, under their leg, you grab under their neck, and you just freaking, like, look them dead in the eye and you just grind your knee into their chest until they can't move. And it's like, it just kind of lets them know, like, I can murder you right now and there's nothing you can do to stop it. And, like, when I was like, I was pretty talented at jiu-jitsu and stuff, like, right off the bat. So I was, like, 150 pounds soaking wet when I started. And I would do that to guys. Like, I would be the guy, like, you know, my trainer, Joe Palmer, like, hey, Joe, go roll with this guy. Give him the special treatment. And I would just and they're, like, usually, like, you know, they could be, like, a Marine or some big juice head or whatever. And then they're getting tormented and tortured by this kid that's 150 pounds.
And you do that because they misbehaved, right? Like, because they, you know, this juice head or Marine, you know, found himself better than some guys, so they bring in you?
Yeah. Well, a lot of times just they just don't know. You know, they're being rough. You know what I mean? And, like,
you just
and,
put them in their place, let them know what's what.
Yeah, like, you know, because we'll roll with them, and, you know, we don't crush them. You know what I mean? Like, we'll beat them, but we're not like hurting them too much. You know, it's like you make them uncomfortable, but you don't, you know, go out of your way to be a jerk. But if they're being rough and they're not giving that same, you know, courtesy to others, then they get it the worst of anyone. You know, they'll get, you know, choked, and you hold the choke a little bit long and all.
Yeah.
I got a question. You got a lot of fight experience. Have you ever been taught how to defend against a knife?
Usually if they have a knife, you're getting cut. I mean, the core concept for jiu-jitsu is 2-on-1. You know what I mean? So you would try to use both your hands to control the knife as best as possible. But for the most part, I mean, there are guys, like, mostly crazy guys that are out there that will, you know, try to do knife fighting and all that kind of stuff. But honestly, if the other guy's got a knife, you're getting cut. You know, you might not get cut super bad, but you're definitely getting cut.
Yeah, I've seen that simulation where, like, you give the one guy a Sharpie and you try to go against him without him marking on your white shirt. And it's fucking impossible. Like think about that.
You're definitely getting cut, you know. You know, but you better hope that guy doesn't, you know, that guy better hope you don't take the knife away from him.
Oh, yeah, because, it's going to go really bad then.
Do you think there's many guys who aren't pro fighters who could hang with pro fighters? Like, are there lots of guys who just train, maybe they're Navy SEALs or something, who could survive in the ring or in the cage, I should say?
Yeah, I mean, there's some. I don't think necessarily Navy SEALs as much. I'm sure there are some. You know, like, those guys are so different, though. I mean, those guys, you know, they're taking some kind of, you know, pill when they wake up in the morning to get them going, and they're taking something to put them to bed, you know, to sleep. It's like, those guys are on...
Yeah,
you know,
they're on speed, pretty much.
Yeah, you know what I mean? And, you know, I'm sure there's some guys, like, I'm sure there's, you know, at this point, there's all kinds of Navy SEALs that are, you know, brown belts and black belts in jiu-jitsu. You know, I'm sure they hang, or pro boxers, or whatever. You know, there's definitely guys out there. There's some guys that are MMA fighters that do great in the gym, and they fall apart and do terrible when it comes time in front of them.
All right, I got a question. Do you think you could take Shaq?
Yeah, Shaq, the basketball player.
Shaq's an MMA fan, and he's with the Boston Celtics now. Probably not. This guy's enormous.
You know, I just wondered, just a guy that's way bigger than you. It's like, whoa.
Shaq, I just imagine Shaq, you're going to need some of this icy hot when I'm done with you, boy.
I catch him in a submission or something, but, like, he was front row two fights ago. The UFC came to Boston, so I got the fight on that card. And I was my coach was standing on, like, the raised barrier around the outside edge, and Shaq stood up in the front row and put his arms up, and he was taller than my coach, who was, like, 4 feet off the ground. It's like, he's ridiculous.
Just too big. Hey, who's the best pound-for-pound fighter?
I think St. Pierre.
Really? That's my pick, too, but I thought it was the unpopular one.
No, I mean, I think that St. Pierre, like, I always say that I think the most important aspect of a fight is wrestling. because if say Woody, say we fight and I have the better boxing, well, I need to have the better wrestling too, because you might have better jiu-jitsu than me. So I need to have the better wrestling to keep it up. And vice versa, if you had the better wrestling, then you would take the fight to the ground and then you would beat me there. So unless you're way better on the ground and way better on your feet, wrestling is the most important thing. You know, like everyone keeps talking about this Anderson Silva St. Pierre fight. I think that even though he's the smaller guy, I think St. Pierre still wins that because his wrestling is so much better. I think
he took down Koscheck at will, no?
Yep, pretty much. Yeah, and he completely stuffed all of Koscheck's takedowns, which were super impressive. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, for people that don't know, Koscheck was an elite-level college wrestler, which usually means that that guy has the takedown advantage. You know, and not only are they great at takedowns, but they're great at stuffing your takedowns. And GSP, who wasn't, as far as I know, like a celebrated wrestler in his younger days, has become one of the best in the world.
Yeah, like he never wrestled. I don't think he ever wrestled. Wrestling. It was all after when he was fighting.
Talk about wrestling. What about Brock Lesnar? He had a pretty big wrestling background.
Yeah, Lesnar was a D1 wrestler. You know, he was a beast wrestler, you know. Kane was a better wrestler, you know, and I think that was why Kane won the fight, Kane Velasquez, you know.
Kane also had the best hands. He his face in too, though, right?
Oh, yeah, he messed up bad. Yeah, definitely.
Yep. So here's a question. So now that you're, you know, you're Joe Lozon, you're famous, etc., do old high school friends like treat you different? Do they have their hand out? Do they try to get things from you?
It's kind of weird. Like I was super quiet when I was in high school. Like I didn't hang out with, like I had a couple friends that I hung out with all the time, but like I wasn't super outgoing. Like I never went to prom. I went to graduation, but that was it. I never went to any dances. Like I never did anything. Like I was pretty antisocial in high school. So like I'll see people out. And I have no problem. Like, I'll go and I'll talk to whoever. You know what I mean? Like, I wasn't outgoing, but I was friendly with whoever. You know, it's weird because, like, some people that I was good friends with, they, like, feel bad. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you know, like, almost like even, like, talking to me, like, they're bothering me or something. And I love to hear from those guys. But, you know, then there's other guys, like, I'll see out. Like, we'll be at a restaurant or a bar or something like that. And they'll, like, you know, they'll come over and they'll want me to go over and say hi to their friends. Like, oh, yeah, you know, me and Joe were, like, we were boys in high school. It's like, dude, I don't think I ever talked to you before today. Like, I'm not a fan of those kids. Like, I'll go and say hi, you know what I mean? I'm not being, like, a snob like that. But don't try and impress all your friends about how we were best friends in high school when we weren't. You know what I mean? Like, there are a lot of kids, and they know who they are, that, like, I hung out with, that I was friendly with, things like that. You know, but if I've never, ever, ever seen you outside of school, don't go and act like we were best friends. You know, and it's awkward, but I still, you know, do whatever, you know, I'll say hi, I'll do whatever.
Yeah, I'm SOL in that department. All my friends got too many damn kids now.
Yeah. My friend is starting to pop out kids too.
You got brothers and sisters?
I have two brothers. Yep. Danny's my youngest brother. He's actually the youngest UFC fighter ever. He trains. My brother Steven has nothing to do with fighting. He just does his own thing.
Does the family dynamic revolve, like, the fact that you're famous and on pay-per-view and such, does that, like, change things?
Not really. I mean, it's a little bit, no, I mean, it's pretty much, you know, the same as always, you know what I mean? It's not a big deal. You know, like, honestly, I'm not going to say I'm not famous at all, but it's like, you're talking, like, F-level celebrity right there. You know what I mean? It's like very small number of people know, you know, who it is compared to, you know what I mean, like a Tom Brady and a Shaq and all that kind of stuff. It's not
just,
I mean,
Russia. If you get recognized out in public, you're some form of celebrity.
Yeah, you know, that does happen. That happens. Like, pretty much if I go anywhere, like if I ever go out, like I go out to dinner or something like that, it's not like there's mobs of people, but someone will always come over and say hi. You know what I mean? It happens pretty much every time I go out. But it's not like it's not an inconvenience, it's not annoying, it's not like paparazzi level or any of that crap.
Yeah. Do you ever get somebody coming up to you wanting to fight you? Has that ever happened?
Nope. You know, usually everyone's pretty cool. But like I said, I'm real good at diffusing situations. If someone was, you know what I mean? You know, I'm real good. I'm like, oh, you know, I'm like, oh, dude, you would kick my ass. You know, like, I
play it off. You said you're in backyard wrestling, right?
Yep.
Have you ever had somebody come to you to beat somebody else up during my youth?
I did. I didn't really do it. There was a kid that a guy that actually trains with us now. Lee Bean, and he was like, I'm from East Bridgewater, which is a different town than Bridgewater, and Lee Bean was like this heavyweight wrestler from Bridgewater, and like for years I was hearing about this kid Lee Bean. Like there were other kids in my high school trying to get set up me to fight him. You know, I've been doing jiu-jitsu for a while, and You know, and I fought other kids, like, at parties and things like that, where, like, I went specifically to fight so-and-so. And they wanted me to fight this kid, Lee Bean, and I'd never met him. And then when I did, he almost, like, we were training together, and he almost broke me in half. He's enormous. Like, I could never, like, that's why I say, like, you know, trying to fight Shaq. You know what I mean? It's like, you got a guy that's 300 pounds, that's athletic. You know what I mean? You're in trouble when you're 150.
Yeah, really? Shaq's arm's so, about as big as you.
Yeah. I was expecting the story to end differently. So the Lee Bean of today still gets the Joe of today.
Yeah. I mean, like, because he's so big. You know, and he's an MMA fighter now. He's got, you know, he's got a ton of wrestling experience. He wrestled at Brown, you know, had like a full scholarship there for wrestling and things like that. Like, so a ridiculous. And he's one of those, like, athletic fat kids. Like, he's 260 pounds and can walk on his hands upstairs and, like, just like a monster athlete. You know, and, you know, I mean, yeah, I could hope that I could land that Hail Mary punch and knock him out or something. But the reality of the matter is probably that he's throwing me through the fence.
You ever hit somebody with a Hail Mary punch and expected him to go down and they didn't?
Yeah, I have. You know, like,
does that demoralize you or anything like that? Like,
A little bit. I mean, it's demoralizing a little bit. But if I hit someone with a Hail Mary punch, I know that I can hit him with another one. You know, it's like, it's usually like if you're putting everything you have into a punch and you still landed, then you can do it again.
Because I've always wondered, you see these things on the movies, you see these guys that can just take a punch and just look at you. I mean, is that really how it happens in some people?
Some people like that. Like, when I've trained with BJ, I've hit him with really freaking hard shots. And he just, like, smiles at me. Like, it didn't bother him in the least bit. You know what I mean? So, it definitely, you know, it's not a very good feeling.
Have you ever rolled with Joe Rogan?
I haven't. No, I haven't rolled with Rogan.
No. Did he get a brown belt, or is he still purple?
He's at least a brown belt. He might even be a black belt soon. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
Rogan's nasty. Yeah, he's real good. Like, I've seen, like, I've talked to a lot of people who roll with him and train with him and things like that. And, like, you know, he did, like, he was always into, like, martial arts and things like that. He did, like, taekwondo and all that kind of stuff. And, he freaking lifts a lot. He's jacked. And he's, like, a brown. You know what I mean? Like, he trains, you know, consistently, like, you know, because he really likes it. You know, some guys train because they have to. Rogan trains because he likes it, you know, and that's way scary.
Joe Rogan, ain't that guy from the Fear Man Factor. Show?
Yeah. No, from Fear Factor.
Man Show. Well, he was on the second cast of the Man Show, right? Not the first one?
Yeah.
Yeah, and of course he was the Fear Factor guy. He does the commentating for UFC, and he does it really well. He clearly knows what he's doing. Yeah. And he's also active. He likes to train. He's into it. I don't know if you've ever seen him with a shirt off. The guy is jacked.
Yeah, he's enormous.
The funniest thing I've ever seen out of Joe Rogan, he was on the Howard Stern show one time, and they produced this stripper who pretended like she had a child by him. She was like, "Remember back spring break, 1999?" And he's like, "I was there in 1999. Oh my god!" And they had him going so well; it was awesome. Had him convinced that she was the mother of his son that he never knew about.
Dude, I have seen Joe Rogan against two guys, and they're both awesome. One was just a total hater, right? The guy, like, flamed him on the internet every day.
MySpace kid.
Was he a MySpace kid? Yeah. And he really, like, I guess he got under his skin, and Joe invited him to come to his gym. And he just, like, you know, the kid wasn't a fighter. And I think, you know, he exhausted him and tapped him out a couple times until it was like, this point's made. You know, what am I doing here? It's like beating up a little kid. And then there was another one. I think there was a comedian. And Joe Rogan and this guy were, like, leaning up against a stage or something talking. And the guy was, like, poking at Joe, you know, just being sort of verbally assaultive. And he's like, "Dude, I could choke you out right now." And the guy didn't take it seriously. He didn't know that Joe was about to step into action. He's like, "Yeah, right. Go ahead. Choke me out." And then he did. Like, he just guillotined him. He guillotined him, and he held it for like 5 seconds. Like, he didn't take him unconscious or anything. And the guy was like shocked, like, "Oh my gosh, you know, you really did that. That really hurt." And he's like, "I warned you, you know, you invited me." That was it. So, yeah, don't push Joe's buttons because he'll take action.
Yeah, he definitely knows what he's doing.
Yep. Hey, what's your favorite class in Black Ops?
I like to run the Galil with dual mags, sleight of hand. And then from there, I switch it up. I think right now I'm running Ninja and I forget what my favorite, Hardline Pro.
Are you prestiging?
I was kidding about Ninja. I meant, no, I don't prestige. No.
Are you zero or one or where are you?
Zero. No, I prestige on Modern Warfare 2, and I wanted to shoot myself immediately. Black Ops wasn't as bad because you can just, you know, you can generally unlock and buy what you want, you know, pretty quick. But I just don't see any reason for it. I have five classes that, you know what I mean, that I can change up based on the game type. And, you know, and I'm not that worried about it. I don't need to have six classes or 10 classes or whatever.
I'm with you, man. I prestiged once because it's a free class, right? The first prestige.
Yep.
And then after that, I started earning my pro perks, and they were so miserable to get. I suicided so many times, and you know, no more. I'm not going to do it again.
I did the same thing. I unlocked every single pro perk, and even the ones that I will never, ever use. Like, I hate second chance, like, with a passion, you know? And it pained me to even get to unlock the pro version, but, you know, I unlocked them all, and I'm never prestiging. Never.
Yeah, I'm about 40,000 off gold guns.
Oh, nice.
Nice.
Yeah.
But I prestiged 17 times already.
Oh, because you crossed the two platforms.
Yeah.
Both platforms.
That's ridiculous.
See, Wings, for the next COD game, you've got to get on PC and be the only person who's max prestige on all three platforms. That would be sick.
That would be sick, man. You know what I was thinking of doing? I think it'd be neat if I got the PC version and use my Xbox controller and just saw what I could do, you know, like post up a free-for-all, see the difference. Because apparently the PC guys have... I think they have an aiming advantage by using the
mouse. They have an aiming advantage, but I've said this before, aiming is 10% of Call of Duty. Most of it, you got 20% that's mental, and the rest of it is all line of sight. Whoever sees who first wins.
73% of statistics are bullshit.
Just say it.
In the case of Wings, you might want to bump that up a bit.
Yeah.
We love you, Wings, man.
Hey, I played a lot of Call of Duty.
Bears are people, man. Calm down.
And I have to say, aiming is the least considered my concern. Aiming's the last thing that happens. First off, you got to figure out where they're at. That's mental. And that's, you know, scouting. You want to get a good line of sight, such as putting yourself on a window, behind a box, something like that. Give yourself the advantage into the gunfight in case there's more than one. Then you aim. Generally, he doesn't even know you're there. So you get the first shot on him. And generally, first shot wins most of the time unless connection plays a huge role in it.
Yeah. And I agree that the way you navigate the maps, predicting your enemy is probably a bigger part than snapping on target. But snapping on target well is an advantage.
It'd be
something I think you'd give up.
I'm just saying, if you went on PC, you probably wouldn't do as well because you're at the disadvantage on that with versus mouse versus a controller. But you wouldn't get blown out. You wouldn't be at the bottom of the list 2-24.
No, yeah. I mean, you got to keep in mind, like you're if you're a top 10% console player, then you're probably a top 30%. PC player.
Higher than that. I mean, PC players, good PC players are few and far between, just like console. Like, for every Sandy Rabbit you got on console, you got, you know, 100,000 ghost bitches.
Oh, I passed Sandy in subs the other day.
You're passing everyone in subs, man. What's the ETA on when I get knocked down?
I think, like, less than 2 weeks.
Something like that, yeah. It's coming. You and Jaws are just storming through everybody. But I don't count you anymore, Russia.
Yeah.
Please, it's totally fair. I even saw you comment on a video. Someone was like, are you going to do any more gaming videos? And you're like, no. I picked up 65,000 subs in the last month, and none of them want to see me play video games, which I think is the right move. I think that, not to say that the COD community is like a small little YouTube thing. It's actually one of the more successful little corners of YouTube. But there are much bigger fish out there, and those are the seas that Russia will.
Yeah, it's not just because of that. I don't like playing video games as much as is necessary to run a YouTube channel as big as mine. I would need to literally play 3 to 4 hours a day, like no joke. Because I mean, I just yeah,
more
with
than
my
that,
connection,
all
with my
quitters.
Connection, yeah, with my connection, I have a hard time getting a gameplay. So I'd have to play 3 to 4 hours a day just to get the gameplay, I'm just not doing that. Plus, to be honest, like this is kind of weird. But I think I'm getting the early onsets of tendonitis in my left hand from gripping a fucking controller for 10,000
hours. You haven't got carpal tunnel yet? You a newbie.
Yeah, exactly.
I've had carpal tunnel since Diablo 2.
Yeah,
so, Joe, are you about to shed a tear about these work-related injuries?
No. I'm
Like Joe, like I was gonna say it earlier. Like Joe's talking about, he gets on Call of Duty to blow off steam. Man, Call of Duty makes me want to punch somebody.
Go join an MMA gym.
I plan to. I drop the weight.
I know. Well, dude, it's the best way to drop weight. You gotta burn fat.
I'm way too big right now, and also have a leg injury to deal with as well. I just want to learn how to defend myself, not do anything else.
Yeah.
I want to say I'm under 400 pounds at this point because I've dropped a lot of weight in the last month.
Dude, yeah, Wings, I wanted to talk about
definitely
that.
Definitely tough when
you're
that
big. So, I hope none of this is too private. You were going to get financing for surgery.
Yeah.
Are we okay? Yeah. And that financing fell through. And it had nothing to do with Wings. It had to do with the doc that he was going to use no longer was interested in that kind of financing. Like the whole company that did the financing went under or something. Am I on target so far?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, so in now that he lap band surgery, that's what it was going to be. So now that lap band surgery kind of fell through, you've done it, I guess, the old-fashioned way, right? You know, you've changed your diet.
I did it a little different this time. Like, I've been on diets before, but this is the first time I attempted a diet when I had, like, a fan base that could support you and all this right here. Like, I basically took donations, and I got enough money to see a dietitian right here in Myrtle Beach, Greg Norman. And basically, he put me on these pills called, I don't see if I'm saying this right, Phentermine, Phentermine. They're basically speed, was what they are. That you can't sleep on them. You always have energy. Amphetamine. You always have energy. I get about 2 or 3 hours of sleep a day, and you never want to eat. It's pretty much the same thing to give the Navy SEALs. And the pills are wonder drugs. I mean, literally. You also get amino acids and protein pills just so my muscles don't deteriorate.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I started out slow. I started out doing Tai Bo for about 15 minutes a day. And then I have like a 25-pound weight. I started doing a little bit of arm exercise. And I bought a bike yesterday, and I did about a half hour on the bike to go along with everything else. And I've probably dropped 35 to 40 pounds in the first month.
That's awesome. You should you ever try playing games while you're on the bike?
I can't do it. I got way too high standards, and I just get mad.
He's talking about gaming standards, not workout standards.
Yeah.
I thought that went without saying. So in retrospect, are you kind of happy the financing fell through and you went this route instead?
Yeah, because I actually didn't want the surgery. My mother was pushing me toward it because she didn't think I had the physical ability to lose weight because basically I have no willpower. But these pills are what actually are helping me lose weight, because as long as I don't think about eating – like, unless I like seafood and like, ooh, I want to eat that, I never think about eating. So I've went 2 or 3 days in the last month where I forgot to eat. It's like, oh shit, what time is it? You know, you just forget to eat. I mean, your body has no craving to eat whatsoever. And the pills help a lot, because at that point, eating becomes something that you have to do, like tying your shoes or putting on a shirt to go outside, instead of something your body wants. If that makes sense.
Now, you at this point, you could eat anything, right? I mean, you've made a choice to eat better food.
Yeah. I mean, the thing with me is I needed a lifestyle change much more than just a diet. Going on a diet and losing weight's great, and these pills are great, but eventually I'm going to have to wean myself off of these pills. Like, I don't want to be addicted to this shit, which costs $100 a bottle, for the rest of my life, you know? Eventually, I got to get myself to a point where I have a scheduled meal in the morning, scheduled meal in the day. I have, like, basically a schedule where I eat at, because I have horrible genetics. Like, you talk about those guys that are trash can men or super strong. Me,
yeah.
I eat sandwiches, I gain weight. That's what happens. I don't have thyroid problems or nothing. I just have a really bad genetic line. Like, I'm balding, you know. I got a fat gene.
You're the opposite of Joe. That's
yeah.
I think I have super genetics. Like, my dad's 50. Like, just started losing his hair just a little bit. You know what I mean? Like, was always like 175 pounds. Got up to 200 and like dieted for like a month and started running and dropped all the weight. Like, nothing. Like, I definitely got lucky in the genetic department.
Sweet. Yeah, I didn't. Yeah. My dad was an alcoholic, and he was really overweight, and he had no hair. Yeah. But he had hair everywhere else on his body, so I got hair on my shoulders, back, chest.
the way you're talking about the pills make you feel with food and stuff, I get like that sometimes. Like I have, like I can eat like a cow. Like I can eat unbelievable amounts of food where you would say like there is no way I could eat it all, and I can put it all away. Like I can eat like one of those big ass Carvel ice cream cakes. Like I can sit down and eat the whole thing. Like I can eat so much crap. But at the same time, I can go 2-3 days without really eating much at all, just because I don't even think about it. I just, you know, like you said, it's not something that your body needs. It's just something you have to do. Like I have to remind myself to go and eat. You know, it's kind of weird.
What's your cut like headed into a fight? Like, what are you walking around at? How much are you cutting?
I'm walking at like between 170 and 175, and I'll usually be that weight until like maybe a week and a half out, and then I eat like a fat kid. Like all the time. Like I really don't diet at all. I stay away from like crap, like ice cream and candy and all that kind of stuff. You know, for the most part, just in general, just because I don't feel good because I work out so much. If I eat that stuff, I don't feel that good. So I'll eat ice cream once in a while, but it's nothing like I eat on a normal basis. And a week out from the fight, I'll be like 168, 170, and I'll cut water from there. So I'll drop 15 pounds in water like from like Thursday afternoon till Friday at weigh-ins. I'll drop 15 pounds.
You heard it. You cut water over the course of a week. I mean, you go a week without drinking. How's that work?
Some people will do it two different ways. Like Jeremy Horn used to do, like, he would limit himself to, you know, like a small cup of water every single day for like 2 weeks out, and he would slowly dehydrate himself over the course of a couple weeks, and then he would make weight. I do the opposite. I drink like a gallon to 2 gallons a day every single day. Like starting 3 weeks out from the fight, 2 weeks out from the fight.
And cutting water, that doesn't sound healthy at all. It sounds like your liver would be getting destroyed.
It definitely does take a toll on your liver, but I do it twice a year. You know, so it's not like I'm not doing it, you know, all the time. But I drink tons of water for a couple weeks, and basically your body just starts flushing out everything. What you're really trying to do is get all the salt and sodium out of your system. And my weight will go up, and that's why I'll be like 72, 74. And, you know, and then as soon as I trick my body, I get my body in the habit of dumping out all this water. And then all of a sudden, you know, come Thursday afternoon, I stop giving it water. And it continues to push all the water out, thinking it's going to get more, and then it doesn't.
And really? Then, so you, like, super hydrate going into the fight?
Yep. Yep, and exactly. Yep.
Like, well, what does having water in your body have to do with the fight, though? I mean, like...
To cut weight. You know, I fight in at 155.
So you're just trying to make the weight scale.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
This is a guy who weighs 170 to 175 every day and fights at 155.
Yeah.
So this is his technique for dropping 15 pounds worth of water out of his body. And, yeah, some guys, you know, there's a balance. So, and Joe's, of course, the expert on this. But if you cut too much, then you can enter a fight without any energy, without any stamina.
Your brain needs water to function.
Well, and they get exhausted, right? So even though they're maybe the bigger guy in the fight, they don't have enough energy to last the fight. And they might be better off fighting against bigger people, but with, you know, full energy.
I know I'm probably not in the position to say this. Have you ever considered trying fiber pills to drop weight?
Because
your body can carry almost 20 pounds of poop in it at a time.
Yeah, you could be like that one guy from Ultimate Fighter that went for the colonic to drop weight.
Oh, no, Tim Silva, right? Is that the guy?
Remember that?
Gabe Rudiger.
But Tim pooed himself during one of the matches.
Tim did poop himself during a fight. I have no problem pooping. Like I spent 40 minutes pooping over the course of a day.
Nice.
I'll never forget. He wanted to cut that weight. For those who don't know, he wanted to cut weight for the fight on the Ultimate Fighter TV show. Oh, and
I know exactly what you're talking about.
And he went through my season. He elected to use a colonic rather than – I don't remember who the coach of the show was at that time, but
– That was my season.
I got a question. Could you cheat?
Hold on. Let him tell the story.
No, but he was telling me. He's like, you know, you just need to work it off, man. He's telling him to get in the sauna. He's telling him to work, and he won't do it. He goes for the colonic. And for those of you who don't know what a colonic is, just Google it. It was hilarious.
don't image search it. that was my season, The Ultimate Fighter. BJ Penn was the coach. That was Gabe Rudiger. He was on my team, and I actually ended up fighting him and beating him up in Boston. Like, you know, when did I do it? Last November, this past November, and or August. But anyways, he was running around telling everyone, you know, now he has to make 155 pounds. So you have like 2 days' notice. So it's much tougher to make weight on The Ultimate Fighter. So he has 2 days' notice, and he was like walking at like 175, 176. Yeah.
178 at one point, yeah. I think. Just, I still remember.
And like he knows that he has to make weight, or he's going to have the, you know, he might have to make weight. And he's eating like ice cream cake, or we're all coming back from the gym, and we're all eating like pasta and things like that because, you know, we just worked out. We're hungry. Our weight's all pretty good. He would eat like half of a pepper while we were eating, you know, pasta. He would make sure that we knew he was eating half of a pepper. And then everyone kind of broke off. He'd be like pounding bowls of cereal. It was like awful. And then he tried to make weight, failed, got kicked off the show. I stood over him and squeezed an IV bag into him. The whole thing was just a disgrace. It was pretty bad.
Oh, I remember that. Hey, so in the being on the show,
I got a question real quick before
you
get off this.
Wait your turn, Wings. Hold on a minute. Being on the Ultimate Fighter, like what was the hard part about that? Was it the mental thing? Was it all
the no contact? You have no contact with your family or outside. Like you have no music. You have no internet. You have no Xbox. I know everyone's crying right now. you have no access. You have no outside stimulation. So like you don't get a newspaper. You don't have any kind of books. You have nothing. You have you and the other fighters that are in the house and a bunch of cameramen that don't say anything and they're not allowed to talk to you.
So in the show, you came off as better able to deal with that than most of the other fighters. But the editing makes it tricky to figure out what the reality is. Like guys would go crazy, would hang on the rafters like monkeys, and you were just kind of like, you know, steady.
Yeah, you know, I basically, I'm definitely an introvert to begin with. Like I'm definitely, you know, I would rather not say something and think about it than open my mouth and look like a retard. So, you know, and being on TV, I understood how you can be portrayed and how things can be taken out of context. And so I was like very careful with everything I said or did. And, like I would basically, we would get up, we had the early training session. So we trained at, I think, 7. So we'd be back to the house around like 9:30. We'd eat, I'd go and I'd take a nap. I'd get up, I'd eat, we'd go to the gym. I'd go to bed early. Like, I missed so many things because I was sleeping. I was probably sleeping like 12 or 13 hours a day, whereas everyone else was probably sleeping, you know, 6 hours a day and just, you know, acting like retards in the house. I just slept, just kept myself off the camera.
Wings, I'm sorry I cut you off. What was that?
I was wondering if you could cheat that way. You weigh in, I guess, like a day before the match or something like that?
Yep.
Could you just pound water during that period and get back up to 175 and fight?
I don't know if I'm up to 75, but I'm up to 170 or so. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just saying, but you weigh in at 155, and you could, and if you take all the water out and you could drink the water again and go into the fight at 175 the next day.
Oh, yeah, that's what everyone does. You know, and they'll do, you know, you can do IVs. You can, you know, you can definitely, yeah.
Why don't they just fight at 175 then?
Because someone will still cut. You say, okay, don't dehydrate. And you say, okay, I won't dehydrate. And then you're 190 and you still cut to 75. People will still do it. You really can't ever stop weight cutting. You know, guys will – and then they have to do day before, because if you try to weigh in guys right before, like say they try to make us weigh in at 55 and then fight like directly after, guys will still cut. And then they probably won't be 75, but they'll probably be 65, cutting down to 55. And then they dehydrate, and then they get in. Like what you said before, is it dehydrates your brain, you know, in trauma and everything like that. Concussions are way worse when you're dehydrated.
So the reason people cut, I think some guys in the stream don't get it. You want to be like a big guy in the fight. You know, if one guy said, "Why can't you train at your fight weight?" Well, you know, if that was your walk around weight, then you'd actually be a 155 pounder fighting against 170 pound men. You need to be that 170 pound guy who just hit 155 for a few minutes. And goes back up.
Yeah, because, I mean, like, otherwise I have to fight a guy that's like St. Pierre, who he fights at 170, you know, but he's not walking at 170. He's walking at, you know, probably 195, 200 pounds.
Right.
So, you know what I mean? So it's like you kind of have to, in the interest of safety, you have to do it 24 hours before so that, you know, people will cut and everyone will struggle to make it. And, you know, I would love it if we didn't, if no one would cut weight and they could stop it. They just, there's no way you can do that. You can't stop that.
Like a 170-pound man like Joe would be fighting against 195.
I mean, UFC's like a multi-million-dollar company. Couldn't they hire somebody like the day before to just follow you around after you weigh in?
Like, you're getting into, like, semantics.
You're talking.
I'm just saying.
20 guys on a card. You know, there's 10 fights. You get 20 guys on a card, and they have a card pretty much every week. You know what I mean?
I'm sure most people take the job for, like, $10 an hour.
Yeah, right? That's what they should do.
You really can't combat it. It's done in boxing as well. I mean, it's done in all
boxing, wrestling.
Yeah, it's done.
Speaking of boxing, if you guys ever want me to take a fall for a couple million dollars, I'm down to take a punch to the face.
They could tell everyone you're Akebono and then just schedule like a frame.
I'll shave my head and you can say I'm Butterbean.
Yeah, wait, right? You could make so much money. Like, all you got to do is get your YouTube subscribers in on this. Like, hey, you've always wanted to hit me. So, all right. $100 a punch, nothing below the belt. Let's go.
Oh, I was thinking a different way. Like Wings of Redemption versus Joe Lozon. You know, get a good $5,000 on the line. Winner gets half. Loser gets half. Be good to go.
I'll do it.
He'll do it. He said he won't even hurt you. He knows when your arm's just before the breaking point.
Yeah, yeah. Wings would go. It's got to be a knockout, though. Wings would go. In that situation, I'd just be like, look, just hit me in the chin. Make it quick. Don't beat me up.
I don't know, this subscriber thing, they did punch me in the face. I could take a lot of them because I got a nice squishy body.
give them all a body shot. Let them punch you in the body. It's like padding.
Yeah. Oh,
God.
So, you know, I'm getting a big head with this, premium guest on Painkiller already. And we had Joe, and we talked about fighting all week. Dude, if we could get Charlie Sheen, I'd talk about sex and drugs all week long, like all night.
That's surely the catch line to get him. Let's get Jake the Snake and like, what's up? We'll talk about cocaine and how to do it.
Yeah, man. So you want to talk about people who are in their area of expertise, right? You talk to Joe, you talk about fighting. If I get Jesus on here, I'm going to talk about, I don't know, creation or the Bible or something. If I get Charlie Sheen, there is no higher expert on women for
hookers
money.
Hookers and cocaine.
There you go, hookers and coke. I think maybe we found our next target, Painkiller
so,
already.
Well, speaking of hookers, Joe, have you ever indulged?
Oh, my God.
And hookers? No way. I am not paying for that shit.
Dude, how easy is it to get girls being a UFC fighter? I'm thinking this is better than musician.
The problem is I really don't want to go after the girls that are trying to chase a fighter.
Yeah, exactly.
Ring girls. I've seen the ring girls. They look worth chasing.
The ring girls are definitely hot, for sure. Yeah. And they look hot in person, too. Like, when you see them in, like, normal clothes, they look way better than they do when they're all dressed up as a ring car girl, for sure.
Hmm.
Yep.
And do they date fighters?
I think Ariane dates someone, but I mean, they could, you know, I don't know what the UFC's policy is on it.
And the best part about it, being a fighter, I mean, you would have no problem, like, overpowering one of them and just taking her away with you. I mean,
you should have done that in your FPS Russia voice.
Yeah, yeah.
No, you put her in chokehold, she wake up, it is happy time. Maybe happy time a little bit before she wake up, you never know.
You know, I always pictured FPS Rush as like one of those. What was that game that had Spawn and like Solid Snake on it and all those Zelda characters that like guest starred? I could picture FPS Rush on a fighting game like that.
Like, do the crazy move and like an AK-47 comes out of nowhere. Like,
yeah, it'd be like an AK-47 juggle.
Oh my God.
All right, guys, I think we're wrapping up the podcast now. Wings, right. You want to see us out?
Yeah. All right, guys. That was Painkiller Already, episode 41 with your boy Joe Lozon. You got anything you want to shout out, Joe?
Nope. Just glad to be on the show.
Thanks for coming.
Peace,
thanks for coming.
Guys.
Later.
Anytime.